Chicka chicka, yeah. Welcome back to Black Friends Dinner, where we navigate what all Black Lives Matter mean in a world where they don't, over food and drinks made with love by me. I'm your host, Nandi K, your Black non-binary bae. I'm going to start saying that every time, guys. Now, I've been a little inconsistent. And I'm really happy with my guest today. So we have the most amazing Miss Aviva J. Aviva J is an artist and performer dedicated to empathy and diversity, primarily through music, wielding voice, piano, harp. She has like three harps, y'all. Guitar, ukulele, basically you name it, she plays it. And her interdisciplinary experience includes theater, dance, composition, and poetry. Aviva currently focuses on performative projects through the lens of community engagement, social justice, and DIY resistance. Welcome, Miss Aviva J.
Thanks, boo.
Welcome. And then we got Miles. You know, niggas got their stage names around here. But Miles is an all-around performer. He sings, he dances, he acts. His primary love is singing. We met kind of, you know, humming around New York City. And he's big on artist collaboration. Me and Miles have sang together a couple times, which has been great. He believes that he cannot live without creativity. Thank you for being here, Miles. Hey, hey, hey. So today's episode is called We Are the Afro Future. And basically, things are changing. The world is changing. Music's changing. Genres are shifting. And the music industry's been completely flipped on its head. I think we can all agree. We're all musicians here. So time and time again. So I want to take a little bit of time to talk about kind of like what music looks like for Black people, especially in this age where people are like working hard to break down genres. So yeah, we're gonna dive in. We're gonna dive right in. So first and foremost, what's for dinner? So Aviva is vegetarian. I love when we have people with like special dietary things so we can talk about it. So today is soul food, but all veggie. No meat, no meat. How long have you been vegetarian?
Since 2009.
Oh,
yeah. I haven't eaten red meat since 2003.
Woo, yes. That's dedication.
That truly.
Yeah, that's dedication. So, because I just,
it is.
I've been off and on. Like,
I've
I do
definitely
off and on.
Tried before, and it's just, I don't know. I give in. I mean, I don't eat meat as much as
right.
I used to.
Same.
And I noticed that I don't have to have it in every sitting.
Right.
But there's sometimes
meat's
where,
good, man.
You know,
fried chicken.
That's honestly what does it.
Straight
that's
up.
Honestly what does it is chicken.
Fried chicken is like what I can't give up. Yeah. So today it's all soul food, but veggie. So I'm doing some cheese grits, some slow cooked collard greens, y'all. Black eyed peas. Is that it? I feel like. Oh, and then I made. Oh, we started with this really hearty salad. It's like. Chopped kale, roasted squash, quinoa, cranberries, pecans. It's
so
real
good.
Good. Nice little way
so
to start
good.
Up. And of course, we have a little cocktail, a little apple cider, or cranberry apple cider.
Mariah cup.
Yeah, we gave Miles a Mariah cup, his diva. So first, we're going to dive in today in white history. I mean, white history is every day.
it, speak it.
It is. So today
why
I just
was it so exhausted just now.
I know I was
tired.
So tired just from saying it.
It's like honestly we just said a mouthful right
yeah
there.
I know right yeah so we're all musicians. I was happy to have a bunch of musicians on the show so we can really get like an in-depth talk about music. And with all this like Post Malone chitter chatter going around, I really wanted to talk to all these artists who are going back from Black. So, like, white artists, obviously, who were considered R&B or soul or hip-hop, who start off in that vein, kind of adopt, like, that culture, that fan base, and then they switch back to their... whiter selves, more like think about Justin Timberlake doing
exactly.
That troll song.
Yeah.
Miley Cyrus has
Lord,
done a complete 180.
She was the
poster
queen
child.
Of it. She
thank
like
you.
she did it through and through. Yeah. None of them did it better than her. She can hold that crown.
Right, like, back to Hannah Montana. We weren't ready.
Hannah Montana. Where's Miley? Because her, also Katy Perry. She tried and she actually
But she
failed.
Never was going to make it into Soul. She never, I don't think Katy Perry ever crossed into that because she only had a rapper on her song.
I was like, about to say, it wasn't her features that she was like, I'm not doing those anymore, I guess.
She definitely thought she was trying.
Yeah.
Because she was like, they all have their definition of what they think it's supposed to be. Yeah. And I guess by her definition, it was like, hey, let's get Migos and Nicki Minaj on songs. And then guess what? I'm black now. I'm making black music. So, and
she had yellow people on stage. I'll never forget that.
I mean, she was just doing a whole bunch of cultural appropriation because she also brought the drag queens out one time to do, I can't remember, I think it was like a late night show or something. Mm. She brought all the drag queens out to like do this whole little thing. And I'm
but
like,
then kick them off. Is that when she kicked them off?
Because no. Migos. Because we know how Migos.
Okay, that's
we
what I
already
thought.
Know how Migos is.
They're very homophobic.
Migos was like,
know.
They need to be removed. However, Katy Perry didn't say nothing, but then turned around and had drag queens in a performance after that. So I'm just like, girl, you don't know what you want to do. You're pulling and it's not working.
So like, why do y'all think that people are doing this, right? So like, obviously, for me, I think Justin Timberlake was probably the biggest shock because we have to look at artists who did it because they were marketed in that way, like against their will. So like, there's like Kelly Clarkson who like, they were like, oh, you're the white girl with soul. But really, she never was that. They just market because she just listens to good ass music.
Right. Like, she just sounds like how she sounds.
Yeah, she sounds. Mm-hmm. And Pink is another one who like that was never really them. So they get more comfortable in being them. Then we have like Justin Timberlake, who I think is the biggest traitor of like. Okay, first, he didn't even learn how to sing until Gone.
Yeah.
On the Celebrity album. Yeah. Literally, he was whining all the way up until then.
I mean, I barely give Justin Timberlake anything.
I'm not gonna lie, I gave him a lot.
I was with JT for a while.
Same.
I really was.
I mean, this is my usual shady response to people like him. Good for you. I'm glad that you got some people to listen to you. I'm always happy for an artist, I guess. In quotes, that
Dead.
Has.
You don't think Justin's an artist?
I don't know. I enjoy some of his music, but like as a full, I'm never. If
you
Justin
never
drops
really
something, I'm not
him.
Like going to go crazy.
See,
over
I used
him.
To be that.
Yeah, and see, same. Also, I was a Backstreet Boys type person anyway. So like,
that's
I really
true.
Was not
I also was too, but I only liked AJ.
No, I feel like everybody liked
of
AJ.
Of course,
so.
No, they didn't. I always try to like people who no one likes. Like Chris Kirkpatrick.
I was going to say like Chris.
Yeah, he's trying to like it. We would never work now, Chris, honey. I don't do white boys with braids.
I think.
Why?
I
though?
Just think that they. First of all, I think that our culture is just something that is captivating. Like. Mm-hmm. And it's not just with music. It's just in everything we do, in the way we dress, in the way we speak, the slang terms that we make up. You know, in front of you know, like a group of people and in front of their friends, they're just like, oh, I can't believe she said that. Oh, my God. But behind closed doors or when they get with us, it's just like, oh, yeah, what's up, bro? Yo, this, all of this. And right. I'm like, I feel like because honestly, I feel like, and it could be just me, I feel like the people in music that have made the biggest impact have been the African Americans in terms of the messages and in terms of the sounds that they brought forth.
I mean, we created
they
it know, all.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying is they feel like, oh, for them, that's their formula. They're just like, oh, let's study the black history of music and let's try to recreate it. And because they know that they have white America on their side, they're just like, oh, well, we'll get the sales and then the other white people will think this is cool. So like, I just think that they do it because they have nothing else to pull from because they never do. And when they put something out that is just like even the slightest bit similar to what an African American artist would do or influence, they just take it and run with it. So, and that like leads me to Miley Cyrus. I know we talked about her. I think that she just came out of nowhere and just was like, I'm gonna just do this. I think it started off with her being maybe heartbroken and just want to rebel.
Yeah.
But I'm still not making right. I'm still not gonna make that an excuse to be like, that's oh, right. well, let me just
try on this
do this whole
right
culture
quick.
Appropriation thing. But she ran with it, and then all of a sudden she was twerking, or at least trying to. I'm gonna say
wearing
she was ticking
cinnamon buns on her head.
I mean, the whole nine yards. And I people she ended up making it cool, you know. And I think that because they find success, that was like, besides Hannah Montana, that was like her next success.
Right, that's yeah, right.
They find success and they're like, oh, the people are loving this, the people are eating this alive, I'm gonna do it. Mm-hmm. And if Miley Cyrus can get away with it, if Justin Timberlake can get away with it, all the other artists are like, why not?
Yeah, what do you think of Eva?
I mean, I think you're right. I agree with you. I think it's like, so like, it's just been like going on for a long time. It's like the same shit in a different gift wrapping or something like that, you know, where it's just like way back, like American Bandstand days,
right.
like
yeah.
the same exact like thing where it's just like, oh, cool. You guys are the culture. Black people are the culture. I can't say that, but I know it. Mm-hmm. So this is how I become cultured, is to emulate you, copy you, appropriate, whatever it is. And some of it, again, you could be like so into it. Mm-hmm. You could be raised on that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
sure.
And that's great. You can tell the difference between somebody who's like paying homage to what they were raised on or what they feel in their soul versus like, I'm not creative enough to not follow a formula that capitalism or commercialism tells me to follow as a white person who wants to be successful via my supremacy.
And I think
man, that brings up a good point. I'm so glad you said that, because I want to bring Bruno Mars into this conversation because he is someone who gets a ton of flack, right? People are always saying he's appropriating. I don't think that's how appropriation works quite. I've seen people explain it where it equals appropriation. I'm a big Bruno Mars fan, and I think that his records, like, you can really tell he is paying homage.
Yep.
But like, how do you guys feel about Bruno Mars and like his recreation of funk, of R&B? Like, I mean, that 24 Karat Magic album was like my boy band love slash like TLC all wrapped into like, I was just like, wow, this is fucking quality pop music.
Yes. I agree. I think that was quality pop music. You go ahead.
I don't dislike Bruno Mars at all. Like, I can't, I'm not going to be one of those people that are just like, oh my God, he culture appropriated, because I don't think that he did.
Yeah.
I truly do believe that Bruno is an artist, and I do believe that. Also bringing back the whole idea with Pink and Kelly Clarkson. I think they just listen to that music. They listen to it, but it's not done to me in a disrespectful way, because you know what? When Bruno gets on that stage, it is Bruno.
Right.
He's not trying to be one of these other African-Americans who have done it in the past. He is pulling inspiration from them, but he's not trying to be them.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a Justin Timberlake and a Miley Cyrus and a Katy Perry who, in no shape or form does it even look like it's something that they would have thought about. It looks like they saw someone's video and was like, let's do this, as opposed to it's still Bruno. Yes, he was inspired by the sound, but it is still wholeheartedly him. And the next project will pull. The thing is, people wanted to jump on Bruno immediately for like the sound of 24 Karat Magic.
Oh, I thought that record was brilliant.
Think about it. Look at his track record of or his discography. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
The first one was bluesy.
Yeah.
The second one was more rock and roll based.
He's exploring.
And the next one will be something else. So it's just like, what are you talking about? Like, I just can't agree with that statement when it comes to Bruno. So
Yeah,
I agree. And I just think I just think you're absolutely right about the diversity of how he comes up with albums or songs. It's like it really runs the gamut of styles. And it sounds authentic. Also, he's not white. Okay, like
that was that was my hope. I was like, but first of all, Bruno's like not. But you know, some of y'all woke
You.
But some of y'all woke book niggas love to be gatekeepers of blackness, which that's I right. cannot stand.
Right, that's true.
It's like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they do to us. Like, exactly. do not do that. Like,
exactly.
But yeah, people were it's feeling away. It's yeah. it's very complicated. So that brings me kind of to like some stuff I've heard going around. So when white people kind of decide to enter into these genres, mm-hmm. Do they like owe, right? Like, is there like a debt they have to pay? So we don't like, obviously, like no one loves Eminem's politics, but as a rapper,
mm-hmm.
like, he's never done anything racist. Like, nope. he's done some other shit.
He
now.
Has done some other
he's
things.
He's very homophobic, super misogynist, super sexist.
He's probably, like, super everything else but racist.
Yeah, but he's, like, not racist, right? And he stood up and held his listeners also accountable for, like, issues, like, whether he's doing a cypher mm-hmm. about, like, being in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick or, like, mm-hmm. G-Eazy, mm-hmm. even, mm-hmm. like, gave up this racist H&M campaign. You know, I don't listen to G-Eazy, but, you know, but like, do white people like, oh, so for example, like this Super Bowl thing that's going on. So Rihanna passed, mm-hmm. Cardi passed, mm-hmm. now it's Maroon 5, right? So like, mm-hmm. should Maroon 5 actually just did a Bob Marley cover, Three Little Birds. It wasn't great.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But, like, should people like that? Because I would say that Maroon 5 is someone who definitely dabbles mm-hmm. genre-wise.
For sure. For sure.
Should they also give up the Super Bowl? Like, is that part... Is that, like... Is there a collective debt that, like, non-black people owe as artists and creatives if they're going to step into, like, our genre and put on our culture? Is there something that they owe us? And what does that look like?
So the two people that I think about prior to you asking this question, but as you mm-hmm. asked it as well, which is a little different because it's not America.
Right.
Like when I was thinking about like white people having this sound that's so black centric,
mm-hmm.
I thought about like Amy Winehouse.
Great.
And I thought about even like Adele or somebody mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You know, mm-hmm. and that there's a different history with soul music in the UK. So for like, sure. you know, we have to like think about that.
Right.
But also in terms of like, they never like code switched back to like, we're white now. Like mm-hmm. that sound is like part of their whiteness.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
And I find that just like, I don't know if we would ask them if they owe any, like ask yeah. them, like we, if we would collect a debt from them
right.
because it's different. They're not working in the same kind of like scope that like yeah. Maroon 5
exactly.
doing the Super Bowl
agreed.
Is.
Yeah.
I find this complex because on one end, what kind of debt would I want them to pay as artists who mm-hmm. I want to be mm-hmm. like accountable to culture?
Right.
On another end, like how do I want them to have the feel like they have the freedom to be either political or apolitical. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that that's possible
I
as an
either.
Artist,
yeah.
but I know artists do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So like how I'm finding as we, because it's 2018, like mm-hmm. because we live in the world we live in, it's hard for us to compartmentalize in the ways that we used to.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
we cannot avoid intersectionality, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. just in terms of how we move through the world and our identity, but like also like art meets commercialism meets
right.
this and that.
Capitalism.
Like
it yeah,
just
art and capitalism really changes
hairy.
The game too.
Yeah.
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you brought up this question. I mean, I think they owe a debt. Is that debt to not do the Super Bowl? It's too late. So I feel like their right. debt to owe is like, you got here on somebody else's culture, number one.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. like, maybe part of the debt in my mind is, like, admit that.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Publicly admit
yeah.
that. Or, like,
yeah, that always,
just
recognize.
Just
say, like, I couldn't be here, like, mm-hmm. if black people never would inspire every single thing that I did.
Like,
that's really
something.
Just
anything,
like that.
That's it.
Whatever.
Just say, like, I wouldn't be this successful or creative if black people never showed mm-hmm. me the way. Like,
right,
that's,
something.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, that's,
and
I feel
that,
like that's a debt paid.
That is what my point was going to be, piggybacking off
yeah.
of what you're saying. The people that I feel are the culture vultures are usually the ones that don't pay any homage. They don't say anything. You ask them in interviews and you're like, they're like, oh yeah, I was in the studio with this person. And we were like, hey, let's just do this. And I'm like, no, the hell you weren't. You listened to Bobby Brown's track. Thank and you. You were just like, there's the blueprint. Mm-hmm. And you're just not paying homage at all, or you're not saying that inspiration is being brought there. And it goes back, because I remember, and I keep bringing her up because I've watched interviews with her. Kelly Clarkson always talks about Aretha, always talks about Whitney.
Yeah, she literally can't have a conversation without talking about
she's
them.
She's brought up on these mm-hmm. people. So, and again, still being Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah,
that's right. And that's the thing. And I think that these people, they don't want to admit like, oh, it's, I think they don't want to admit like, oh, I stole from the black community. I stole mm-hmm. from the black sound, black music. And I think that all it takes is, I mean, in terms of like the Super Bowl, I think it's just saying, hey, thank you, black culture. Or thank you for this person, whoever I listen to, for doing this and for making this music. If it wasn't for you, then I wouldn't have had this inspiration or whatnot in some type of way, you know?
Yeah, obviously I'm hoping Maroon 5 does like a portion of the national anthem and kneels. Like that's the only thing that could really amazing. Like solidify them to me. But you brought up something that made me think about when people just say like they went in the studio, right? So there's two instances of that I can think of right mm-hmm. on the top of my head. One, very widely publicized, Blurred Lines, Robin Thicke and Pharrell. How you could have the same idea as Marvin Gaye 40 years in the future, that's beyond me.
That was actually crazy.
And for Pharrell's black ass to be involved.
For him to be, and
I so was anyway, right. So moving on. Right. We're going to pay that dust. That's been dust settled. Lights. They've been sued. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Money is being paid. So what about when black people do this thing? So I have this thing about Childish Gambino.
Tell
right?
me. Tell me. Mm-hmm. I'm so ready for this.
Know his background. Like I know mm-hmm. his career. He's obviously like mostly a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I knew some people who knew him back in the day mm-hmm. When he first started rapping. And so, and I actually used to know, like, Childish Gambino or Donald Glover sent their lyrics over to this friend of mine mm-hmm. and was like, let me know what you think. And my friend's like, he's white, but like very well versed in hip hop people. Mm-hmm. And it was like a music chain. So it was like that kind of thing. And he told Childish Gambino that he needed to work on his lyrics. So fast forward to whenever he got super poppin', I never could really get into it. It's mm-hmm. not really my vibe. Mm-hmm. Fast forward farther, mm-hmm. Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I recently watched that, and I felt like there's this thing that I feel that he does is that like he makes stuff for white people, even though he's black.
Yeah.
So when the This Is America video came out, mm-hmm. everyone was like, wow. And I'm like, this is for white people. And I think that he shouldn't have done it. You know, mm-hmm. like I did not like, it was very triggering for me. Mm-hmm. Like, especially like the shooting. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why do you have to shoot him?
Yeah.
But what made me the maddest is when I watched a video about the producer who produced Redbone.
Okay.
Okay. So for our non-music listeners, Redbone is literally Bootsy Collins, I'd Rather Be With You.
Yeah.
Like, it literally is the same song. It's in the same key. Like, you can sing either song along. It's the same song. Yeah. I watched this genius video where the producer, who's like a white European guy, maybe he's like German or Swedish, you know, somewhere cool, like hip white people producers are. And he was like, yeah, like Donald just sent me over these drums and I just came up with this. And he had all the instruments. He was like, oh yeah, like Parliament used to use this. So mm-hmm. I got this.
Yeah.
He names all these groups.
Like plugins or something. Mm-hmm.
He bought like mm-hmm. a Rhodes right. for it, you know, like a 1970 something Rhodes. It was like crazy nerdy music shit.
Yeah.
But then mm-hmm. for him to be like, oh yeah, Donald just sent me these drums. And so I just came up with all the rest of it myself. And I'm just like,
you know.
But have you heard of Bootsy Collins?
mm-hmm.
One of them has.
It's like and so that's what bothers me kind of. I don't like when black people do it, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like Childish Gambino has said some very questionable things in the past. Mm-hmm. And like, just when I see his work, to me, it's not made for Black people. It's just made by Black people. Mm-hmm. So how do we feel when Black people kind of exploit this culture that, quote unquote, right, is ours,
mm-hmm.
but we're presenting it not for us. We're mm-hmm. presenting it for the white gays.
Because
mm-hmm. I was 38 hot, honey.
It's interesting that you have that observation about Childish. And I think that what is interesting about what he has done in these past few years, even with the Feels Like Summer video and the This Is America video, I think what's interesting is it was left up to a lot of interpretation. And what's funny to me is that you're the first person that I've come across that has had this opinion mm-hmm. about it. And I've talked to a lot of other people, and each other person has their opinion about it. Some people don't like, oh, he shot the person. Some people are like, oh, but it's giving this message. Oh, but he's personifying this. In terms of that, I think just even as myself as an artist, it's just interesting because, you know, we've talked and
yeah,
you've heard like my music as well. And I can say for myself that it comes from, like, inspiration will come from nowhere. Like, I'd be walking down the street and I just make a song.
That happens to me today. Yeah.
It ends up being a song that sounds like something that's more crossover, something that might be more for white people.
Sure, yeah.
So it's hard for me to fully wrap my mind around what Childish is doing, and wrap my mind around the idea of, oh, he's doing it. He's like whitewashing and like mm-hmm. trying to appease. But because I myself felt like I was in the middle about the This Is America video as well.
Yeah.
I do know and feel like some people or some artists who are Black will do it to catch the attention of white people.
Fave.
And then
Beyonce.
Okay. I knew you were going to bring that up and I was already going to use it as an example, but I'm
don't
not even going to say.
Don't kill me, Beehive. I love Beyonce.
I'm not even
going
to say just her. I wasn't going to bring her up because I know we've had our conversation with her. Another person
Beyonce,
that I was going to bring up was Janelle Monáe, because Janelle Monáe, we know she came out certain image, certain looks, certain sounds,
certain narrative.
Right,
she had a very powerful narrative at the start of her career as well,
which I wanted her to stay with.
Same.
And then somewhere in between now and then, I feel like maybe she was trying to get a larger audience to pay attention to her so that she can be like, hey, here's my message.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of what you're saying, I think it is a way to do it.
Right. No.
And I also think that there's a time limit in which it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like we said, Beehive, again, I like Beyonce. I love her.
Yeah, same.
But I will say that, okay, B, you waited a while.
The
you
timing
waited a long
was very
while.
And not yes, that she wasn't. Listen, y'all, J&B mm-hmm. was throwing hella money behind everything.
And
it's not that they weren't active.
Right.
But being, like, reflecting the times, which I always love that Nina Simone quote about that it's an artist's job mm-hmm. to reflect the times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Beyonce was really doing that. Until
formation. I think that more recently Beyonce may have opened her eyes and been like,
yeah, of course. And we're, yeah, no, I completely agree with that too.
So I think that she actually started looking and was like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I think Coachella was quite hilarious. Mm-hmm. I think it was quite hilarious that she did that. And I was like, you know, all of these white people paid all this money and they're
but
on
no
the front.
One's mad at Beyonce.
Right.
But like, it's I'm not even gonna get that deep, actually. I'm gonna take back what my thought was gonna be. So like, it's go ahead.
Oh, okay. It's funny that you bring up the like this point about her, like maybe she opened up her eyes or like started seeing some things.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Donald Glover or Childish, mm-hmm. like I think that I just, to my observation, he seems like someone, and he's written a little bit about this, but like he seems like someone who's like a really high social monitor, like mm-hmm. does not know how to not think about what other people are thinking, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that that like comes out in this idea of like, you know, his stuff is clearly like made by a black person, but maybe it's not made like for just for a black audience, right. or to like mm-hmm. celebrate or elevate a black audience. I think there's so much happening in his head, both like externalized and internalized. Mm-hmm. And like we as artists get this incredible playing field mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of how we work through our shit. Right. And the shit that the world yeah, threw sure. at us, you know, like we get this in crazy playing mm-hmm. field. Mm-hmm. And I feel like what I'm seeing from him, both like in his acting, his writing, his mm-hmm. music, is that he's a dark dude. Like, yeah. but like, and he's not like a hopeful dude. Mm-hmm. You know
right.
what I mean?
No,
like
I feel that.
He's
no.
not a hopeful dude.
I consider myself a
yeah.
pessimist.
Yeah.
Well.
You know,
I'm definitely
and
not
so
on
I feel
right
like,
side of things.
But he still is so hyper aware of how white people move through our mm-hmm. world. And
yeah.
he's still so
and
hyper aware.
He moves through a white world too.
He moves through a white yeah. world. I don't think that I think that he's pissed about it.
Yeah.
I don't think that he is like trying to calm the storms at all.
Right.
I think mm-hmm. this is his version
yeah.
of like being like, I'm a storm. Yeah. I don't even care. I don't have time
yeah.
to yeah. celebrate wow, yeah. us. I don't have time to calm your storm. I'm in a fucking storm.
Yeah, and this is what
right.
it is. Wow.
What?
Yeah.
Right. No, that's like, a different way to look at it.
And it's a mess.
That's,
like,
yeah, no,
it's
that's
a bit of a mess.
No,
and
that's
that
a
makes
way to look at it.
Yeah, and that really makes me definitely view it from a different light because
yeah,
I'm a big, like, don't spread black pain. And, like, I have my own personal
yep.
triggers mm-hmm. around, like, black violence. And, mm-hmm. like, I didn't. My whole thing was, like, him, a black man,
right.
killing another mm-hmm. black man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In front of white people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was
mm-hmm.
like, it was all about like who's watching. And like, of course, like all my like woke white friends are like, oh my God, Nandi, did you see the video? And I'm like, yeah, like it's not really like my
mm-hmm.
vibe.
Steve, yeah.
yeah.
Like it's clear that like white people don't care about black people getting shot.
Right.
Like I'm like, I didn't need
right.
him to shoot someone. But that was that definitely made me look at it a different way of like, he's just navigating
he's
through
just
his
like,
shit.
Yeah.
yeah.
Really just out
and
here, like
it,
in a really big limelight, but like also just like, this is it. Like, it's not me.
Right. And even like with his discography, even leading up to these
mm-hmm.
moments that he's in, it's just Childish is another one that has never just been on
yeah, he's always
the
doing
straight
something
and narrow.
Different.
Like, it's
no,
just,
I agree with that.
He's kind of all over the place
he
with
really
everything.
Is.
What
been.
I do believe, this is the only reason why I'm like, I couldn't quite wrap my mind around mm-hmm. that idea that you were stating is just because I think that he's just in his own, like she said, like kind of in his own world and doing his own thing. And I think that what his artistry brings about within both the black community and even
mm-hmm.
the white community.
I
think it brings about conversation and it
yeah.
makes you talk and it makes you look at things I think in a much more intelligent way as opposed to
agreeing.
Kanye
so last question three mm-hmm. people who that's non-black has paid the debt and you can actually just one person each we can each name one person I'm gonna use my person is Britney Spears. She is literally the most unproblematic black white woman that there is. She stayed dancing to NDRE. Like she stays giving big ups to black artists that she follows. She
mm-hmm.
pops up on social media doing a dance to Brown Skin one day. Everybody
yes.
was like,
oh my
what
God.
Is Britney
yeah.
Spears doing listening to Brown Skin? She's like, oh, I love NDRE. And I love Britney Spears because she's just not problematic. She just minds her business and she gets credit where it's due.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. Oof.
It's a really
this is a
yeah,
hard
this
one.
Was a tough
it's
one.
A, it's
this
a,
is definitely
it's
hard.
A hard question.
Yeah, I mean, this shows how many white people have paid the debt, though. It's a lot of y'all.
Yeah. I mean.
Oh, you are going to hate me for this
one. Oh, you about to say something wild.
You about to hate me for this one. But you have got to admit that she has definitely paid homage.
I can't.
And she has.
No.
She definitely has paid homage, and she has not. She's kind of stayed in her own lane and did what she's supposed to be doing. I truly believe that Demi Lovato. I knew you were gonna get upset. Please tell me
y'all
that
don't
I'm
know
wrong.
The backstory please, of this I Demi don't. Lovato thing.
Please
I don't.
Tell me that Nate, I'm wrong, though.
Miles
please.
Is always trying to sell me on Demi Lovato, and I'm like, yeah, she can sing, but no one cares. It's like, yes, she has a fantastic voice.
In terms of what you just asked, I feel like Demi Lovato is a good answer.
I agree. She's unproblematic. You know, she doesn't say anything wild. I mean, she hasn't quite been in like quite solidarity, but she do always be surrounded by brown people.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this is really hard.
It's hard, yeah.
You know, because it's like,
you might have to go way back in time too.
And like, no, but honestly, that's what I was thinking of too. I was like,
were you like an older
way back? And then
yeah, I think someone else is good as Adele. She always like,
yeah. I was about to say Adele.
The thing is, Adele
I just
is
feel
not even
like,
in the forefront enough to like.
Not now. She's
not now, but like I feel like while she was oh, true, never true, like, true. You know, overstepping boundaries. She like, yeah. She also kind of stayed in her lane. She was just like, I'm singing. I sound like this. I'm doing it until my heart breaks again. Yeah. Like, thank you for the applause. Thank you so much. Like, she was just kind of like,
yeah, she even talked about how her bus driver gave her this bluegrass tape. And that, who obviously he was black.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He gave her bluegrass tape and that inspired 21, which is one of my favorite. Whoa. That's probably my favorite Adele album. Mm-hmm. I got it right when I moved to New York. And like she was like, my bus driver gave me this bluegrass tape and it just like opened up my world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unproblematic.
Yeah, she's just exactly in terms of like unproblematic, whether or not they've gone back and said anything. Like again, like Britney Spears is just unproblematic. Yeah, it's not like she's out here like, and another thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, whatever.
They always mess up when they say that.
Britney is in Las Vegas living her best life, honey.
She's just doing her thing.
Give me my Las Vegas shows and leave me be.
This podcast is sponsored by Shea Butter Twitter, homemade, handmade shea butter. Find us at www.sheabuttertwitter.com. All right, y'all, we're back from dinner. So I kind of mentioned earlier that we have veggie soul food. Lots of people think that soul food is inherently unhealthy. A lot of people think that. Mm-hmm. But my mom went vegetarian when I was like 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. She went for a year. She made us do it along with her for like 6 months. Which was, it's very rough in the South, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you don't know any vegetarians
especially
growing
up
in the South.
You're going over to your family house and they got all the meat lined out.
Listen, don't even get me started because I eat chitlins. I eat all that. Okay, so, but since Aviva's a vegetarian, I still wanted to make soul food. And there's so many, soul food is all about the sides,
so
though.
Of it. Exactly.
And none of them really have meat. Like, obviously, I didn't put like ham in the like greens or the. Being sometimes I'll put
and
like
I'm
turkey,
not like if some like you know if something's made with chicken stock or something.
Yeah, you won't be crazy about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was super good. But I said that's a lie in 2018 that all southern foods inherently unhealthy. But what was interesting is like we're just coming off Thanksgiving, and Aviva made these bomb ass sweet potato pies. Okay, and they were vegan.
What?
Plot twist. After we ate it, Aviva's like, oh yeah, they're vegan. After it was all gone and destroyed.
See, she knew exactly what she was setting y'all up.
I would have ate it regardless
because
it's sweet potato pie.
Right.
But Aviva was telling me that she's been making like some of her family's old recipes vegan. You want to tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, about a couple years ago, my mom and my grandma gave me this old mixing bowl and like a recipe book, and it had a story of my great grandmother in the front. She was like a famous cook and like restaurateur in Chicago, but she was illiterate.
Wow.
And so they managed to like capture her like most popular recipes and like write them down for me and stuff. And so sweet potato pie, of course, was one of her mainstays that people ordered, even for catering, her like pineapple upside down pie, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to go through each of these and make them, but now I'm going to start making them like vegan or gluten-free or dairy-free or egg-free.
Wow.
And see if I can still keep the essence of. So it's just been like a fun challenge.
Sweet potato pie was on
listen. Point. Well, now you just got to make another one because
there's still filling. I just need another crust.
Yeah. Well, let me know because I like my sweets.
So soul food, everyone kind of has their own definition, but when you think of soul food, like what is it and who makes it and why do you love it?
What's interesting to me, because even when I was like thinking about this prior to, I don't think it's about the food. Mm. I think it's about the family and the unity. I think a lot of the times when we're making that soul food, or especially like because Thanksgiving just passed, that's one of those main holidays. But even in the kitchen with my grandma, even in the kitchen with my mom and whatnot, there's the cousin that's in there helping out. There's the sister or the brother that's in there doing something or learning the recipe. Or like you said, you know, watching the videos, getting the recipe. I think it's about the transferring of that person's soul through what they're making. So I think that that's more so what it is, because it's not really one of those things that you just kind of do by yourself. I mean, you,
unless you're me.
I mean,
I'm an overachiever though.
But I just think that that's what that's my true definition, what I feel like it is. And it's
like the gathering.
Yeah. To me,
so, like that has food.
Yeah. And even if it's not like someone helping out, like even what you're saying, like it's you, we were still here. The first thing I did is go straight to the kitchen to talk to you while you were cooking. I could have came and sat out here, but that's it's the environment that it brings. So that's kind of what I feel like it is.
Yeah, that's well said. As you were saying that, I was thinking that's really true, because if I just make, like, it's not the dish, it's not the dish. It's like, how many times have I made macaroni and cheese, baked some macaroni and cheese? Not every time would I have considered that soul food. Or like, not every single time that I make greens would I consider that soul food. It's like, what's the context? I mean, even if I'm by myself, like, what is the context? So, like, who's around? Like, what essence is being put into the making or the eating of the thing?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way until you said that.
Yeah, that was interesting, because I know, like, when you were saying, even if it's just you, like, what's the context? I cook soul food when I feel homesick. Like, when I be missing being at home, like, last week, y'all, we had fried chicken livers, okay? Like, I be getting
I was just about to say, you be going off.
Getting down. Because, like, there's just some stuff that's just, like, I have not had chicken livers in probably like 15 years.
I truly cannot remember the last time I've had chicken
livers. Literally 15 years, probably. I was definitely a teenager.
I know my grandma made it like when I was younger, but I can't remember the last time I've had it.
They were, I don't remember. And I was just like, ooh, I'm going to make fried chicken livers for dinner. Like, I'm going to make, you know, collard greens that cook. I made oxtail. I've made oxtail so many times already this year. As soon as it snapped cold. But
yeah.
So with that being said, let's get into the dinner of our conversation. You know, it's not just food for your body. It's food for your soul, or our bodies, your soul. So we're talking about the Afro future of music. We see music change so drastically over the past 15 years, from records to tapes to CDs to MP3s, LimeWire, Napster, and now we stream everything. So we're going to date ourselves a little here, because some of y'all are not going to know what some of these things are. It's made a significant impact on how professional musicians make money, and it's lifted the gate on not only who can make music, but also how you can get it heard, like, i.e. the internet. Music ain't what it used to be. It's never been so relevant. How is this statement relevant when we look at Black music and its impact over the same amount of time? Rap and hip-hop reaches far and wide, and soul and jazz started spreading across the globe with the likes of icons like Sarah Vaughan, Louis Armstrong, Nina Simone, and then moving forward, people like Quincy Jones or Aretha Franklin. Mm-hmm. So as musicians ourselves, what do we see changing that we like, and what have we like lost in this change? And first, I want to talk about how computers have really like significantly impacted and changed the music industry. What do you like? What don't you like? What have we lost or gained, if anything?
You're rolling out your eyes.
Because me and Nandi have this. This is another conversation. We talk music all the time.
That's
and
what we do.
It's a real sensitive and tough subject, because there are good things about the change that have happened, but there are also things that I'm just like, I feel like we're lacking and we had to sacrifice for it. The computers, I hate the whole auto-tune. I've never lived for the auto-tune era. And it's
I live for T-Pain. I just want
to. T-Pain was the only, I was just going to say that, but T-Pain's the only person, because it was stylized to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously he's a real singer and arranger.
Right.
Like, you can't just, yeah.
I think that what T-Pain did was he went into the studio, he sang the song, and then they auto-tuned the song as a point to stylize it.
Right.
Whereas Future, Lil, all these other Lils that came out,
yeah.
I'm like,
they rely on
you auto-tune. Can't. Right. Do nothing.
It's off key, even with the auto-tune.
Like,
yeah.
And
yikes.
The thing is, because I think it is a nice sound sometimes to have that electric sound to your music. I appreciate it more hearing the actual voice. And you listen to just because we were talking about her, you listen to old Mariah, and you hear like how in the studio you didn't have all that extra finesse,
right.
And even where like things that may not have been as clean still made the record, because it was like, this is just how it is. And to me, that just adds the rawness, that adds the true artistry to the music, because it's like, that's truthful,
right.
We know as artists that the voice changes every single day. One day you're Mariah Carey, the next day you're Toni Braxton. So it's like, It is no shade.
No, it's just
that's the truth, because they're two contrasting voices.
Yeah,
but it can happen. Like, there are days that I'm like, I am singing down, and the very next day I try to do the same thing, and I'm like,
for real, you're but, like, man,
what?
That's so real.
But I think that the computers have made artists. First of all, people who aren't really artists become popular, because you don't really have to know how to sing. You can take, we've seen it done before, like in these viral videos where people are doing the interviews with cops or something, and it ends up being a song.
Yeah.
Off of them talking. So you really don't think that they're doing that.
Wow. My mind studio? Is just blown just then, because I didn't even put that together. Like,
like, you don't have to have talent anymore, and it's upsetting. That's one of the things that's upsetting about it.
Yeah,
I have so many.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot,
you know, and this is something I think about a lot, because first, I'm in like several different types of bands that are crossing these thresholds of the changing music industry, but also like my own music, as it, you know, I sort of like have been experimenting with how I want my voice to sit with whatever message I want to send at any given time, and like where I sit in the spectrum of Afrofuturism. And I don't think I would even think about that if it weren't for computers being in my life. I also wouldn't have even, like, I could have just stayed in this one lane of just singing like super acoustic, like super one, two voices at a time, laying down like three tracks and being like, that's enough. If I didn't have access to like GarageBand,
right,
when I was 19 or whatever, and being like, oh,
You mean I could record my idea right now
in the computer,
four parts,
yep, all of the parts,
and play. Oh, I can hear that back today. Mm-hmm. By the end of today,
goosebumps, yep, thinking about those moments. Yep. Yeah,
like in my room. You
yeah,
know,
anywhere
so
I'm yeah at. Yeah,
without
wow
having like Pro Tools or having had to take this engineering course or mm-hmm whatever. So, like the sort of like open source way that mm-hmm that the internet and like computers have changed the music industry. Again, it's like you said, it's good and bad. It's like opened it up for people who have had limitations or prohibitions placed mm-hmm on them that they don't have to deal with anymore. Mm-hmm. It also like opens up the playing field and there's more shit, right? Like there's more like amazing yeah stuff mm-hmm and there's more crap too, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny that you like brought up this like iTunes versus like real, you know, or like unaffected yeah voice thing and the difference between somebody using it stylized versus mm-hmm like mm-hmm using it as their vehicle to get out there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Those are really two different things. And I, every day, I just wake up feeling grateful that, I don't know. I mean, I got my degree in voice mm-hmm and composition. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm, and whatever, like growing up, I like played piano and, you know, choirs and right classical and the musical theater and all that stuff. And by the time I got to college, I was like, I'm going to study contemporary styles, mm-hmm, like jazz, blues, pop, right, rock, that's it, you know, whatever. And I feel like if I hadn't, I just feel grateful that I don't have to use these stylized, they really mm-hmm do feel like right tools in a toolbox. Right.
They do.
To right me, and I don't think right you have to have had gotten vocal training for that mm-hmm to be necessarily no true. You do have to find your own
right
voice mm-hmm first and foremost. There's right no like shortcut to that.
No.
And what we're seeing is a lot of people trying right to shortcut that and be yeah like, I don't need to find my voice.
This is the voice. This is the voice right here. Yeah.
Like,
where it should be an embellishment more so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hearing that. I find it all very fascinating because like our attention spans have changed across time, yeah, like our willingness to pay
right
for and collect yeah music and listen to it over and over
yeah
and long
no,
form.
That's
short
crazy
form is changing too.
A lot, yeah.
It's so weird to be like a working musician in this time. It feels like a slow, it just feels like a really long and slow puberty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Music
industry. Yes.
It just feels like, weren't you 14, 8 years ago?
Right.
Why are you still, like, why is your face still right so pimply? Like, it yeah just right feels like it's taking
yeah
a long time for us to figure it out. But I still remain fascinated, and I think I wouldn't feel as calm about it if I didn't feel like I had a full toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm
also if I didn't feel like I had taken the time to find my own voice first.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can be like, oh, dabble in that, or I won't.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't feel insecure about either one of those choices.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That it took me like some time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that's interesting about like finding your voice and having these things in like your arsenal, like how like you use the Voice Live 3,
yeah,
the loop pedal, mm-hmm, like vocal effects pedal. I use a vocal processor too.
I admire artists like you all.
So
I admire.
So, but that was because, so a few years ago, I saw this chick who I'm a huge fan of. You might have heard of her, Melanie Charles. She's like this fantastic jazz musician. And
yes,
I saw her with this band that she used to have called Rat Habitat.
Okay.
And the guitarist was this dude, Jordan, who's like play with Lauryn Hill and shit. Like, it was just like very sceney,
yeah,
kind of a sceney band. But she's just amazingly talented.
Yes.
Like, this bitch is out of control. She plays the flute. So I saw her using this like vocal processor
mm-hmm
to like have all her backgrounds. And I'm big on like BGVs
mm-hmm
and harmonies.
Yeah.
Like, I live for that shit. And I'm not trying to hire people. Once I started really making my own music, I was like, I'm not trying to hire anyone to sing backup for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really was really, really gravitating towards the more electronic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
like seeing this like dope black jazz mm-hmm. musician who is like has more musicality in her finger than like I have in my whole body. I was like, wow, she's really using her voice as an instrument. And so mm-hmm. now I'm super into like gadgets and like I have that.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting, honestly.
Yeah, it's a whole new way to explore the voice.
That is it's another true form.
You should get one. I think it would be great for your sound.
I think that it probably would be too.
It would really like move you, I think.
Yeah.
Because it helps you get, if you can, I feel vocal, as a vocalist, like I don't really play instruments. So like I've been playing hand percussion, but that's all I do. And so I felt very limited over the years of when creating, because I'm like, fuck, if I want to make something, I got to like try to meet up with a producer and like, hopefully it can just be like a collaboration and not like they're trying to like charge you money for us to collaborate. And like having a loop pedal like really changed that. Yeah. Like I started doing sets with just a percussionist and my loop pedal. And it feels great.
Yeah, I remember when we first met, you were pretty much diving into that.
Yeah,
I
was just getting it.
Because I know you were like in this moment where you're like, you know, I'm not really on that anymore. Like I'm trying to create the environment like while I'm there. And so it's interesting now to see you, even the clips that I see from you and Mike, just how, and even when I've performed with you more recently, I was just like, oh, she's literally building her own sound and building her own instrumentation, her own BGVs. And it's so captivating because you're still filling the entire room and it's just this one person and their art and their voice. So it's truly something amazing and enthralling to see. So
yeah, shout out to computers for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, like
this is where they're
like,
good.
Technology is really dope.
However,
dope
it's one of those things where it's like I don't need the computer,
right?
But it is a great embellishment. So like,
so that brings me to one thing that I definitely wanted to talk about. We talk about how like you don't need it and who does. You know, Quincy Jones and Future are both producers.
No, they're not.
And so Future, if you look him up, he is a song producer. And Quincy Jones is also a song producer. So have we shifted our standards where it comes to like, how did that happen? How are both Future and Quincy Jones the same title? And if we were gonna rename one of them to be a more appropriate title, what would we call them?
Future's a celebrity. And Quincy Jones is a producer. I mean, and it's no shade. Future, again, do what
very
you do.
Shady.
Do what you do.
Good
but
for
like,
you.
I don't know. I think that that's a question I've been asking. How did we get here? Like, how did we get here in music? How did we get here to where Future is considered a producer? One of the things that I feel like I'm unfortunately chalked it up to is the times just changing. Because let's be honest, our parents will say the same thing about our music. I remember actually being in the car with my goddad and I was like showing him, I can't remember what song it was, and I was like, oh, this is so good, so good. And he's just like, but you can't even understand anything they're saying. Oh, this music has changed, all of this, whatever.
Yeah, of course.
However, and this is me, I am like a student of music, so I'm not only just listening to the music from my generation. I have listened to the Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Yachty. I listen to some Post Malone because I really want to be versed when I'm having a conversation with somebody.
You want to know what's out there. I always say that's a musician's responsibility. You can't just listen to what you want.
Yeah, and so my thing is, I am speaking as a person who has really listened to these people and admittedly liked some of their songs and been like, I can't lie.
It's a bop.
I like this.
Yeah, it's a bop. Hit. God damn it. A bop will get you every time.
I have to admit it. I'm a true artist. When it's good, it's just good.
Yeah.
However, I am going to argue the point that it has just truly changed. When
a song
when a song named Versace is 75% of the song and it becomes a hit, as opposed to I Will Always Love You. You have to admit that there's just a complete change, but it's a change in the audience. If the audience just likes it, then they just like it. And unfortunately, this climate of music
right now,
unfortunately, this climate of music and like what people are listening to, they just want the quick, trendy sound that they're going to. I mean, social media has just made it to where your song is like that.
Things are just so shitty. People just want to have a good time. They don't even want to think, I think.
No, you know? Like, it's not about that. It's not about the feel good anymore. And then, like, you have people.
It's too feel good.
Right.
I agree.
You have the people like Adele that jumps in and just is like, fuck all of y'all. I'm doing what I'm going to do. I'm not going to show my body. I'm here to sing my voice. Yeah. And everyone loves her. But then you're just like, well, why? So here's proof that you don't have to do all that extra that you're doing. But that's just, I mean, everyone's not as privileged as Adele. She has one of those voices where you just got to sit there and you just have to love her.
You have no choice.
But I think this is what it is. Like, people's acceptance of what things sound like has just changed.
Yeah. I think that's really true. I mean, I think it's just, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say, I mean, maybe it is unfortunate. I hesitate to say that again, because like you also said you're like a student of music, so you listen to a large range of things. I have yet for it to feel like, I don't know, I have just yet to feel like saddened by it. I mean, I am in some aspects, but I'm still just like my curiosity or like my fascination is just sort of like overriding.
Yeah, because then you just go find more things.
Elements of there's entertainers who aren't artists. There are artists who are entertainers.
There's Rihanna. There's the word. There's the word. Entertainer.
Like, there's Rihanna.
There's celebrities who want to be called artists.
Yeah. Right.
So people call them that even though they don't think they are. You know, and all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And like, I'm so, I think it's such a cool field that we get to have our opinions, but and also we get to have a say in like standards, but also there's still like it is ever changing.
Yeah,
the
it is.
It's like ever changing. It's sort of like, I mean, we're literally like we swipe to find love. So like, of course people think future's a producer. Like,
I found my boo swiping.
Like, putting it in perspective.
It's just the time. Like, putting it's not, no shade. It just is like, I think it's the same thing that you said, like times are changing and it's just like.
The thing is, I like the fact that you use the term entertainer because that's a whole nother element. And I think that where the problem lies with the whole future and Quincy both being considered producer is that if the times are going to change, if the music is going to change, then the titles need to change as well. Or you need to create the title for that person.
Yeah, so
future, to me, is an entertainer. And there I feel like Quincy is a producer. Now, that I'm not upset about, because that is a true statement to me.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of, like, you know, people like Future who are entertainers, who are, like, you know, famous on the internet. Kids today, that's me, y'all. They barely remember CDs. So, like, I had tapes. Y'all had tapes, right?
I had tapes.
I had tapes for a short amount of time. Yeah. I think I had a couple tapes, like two or three.
I think
tapes.
It was more of my mom's tapes, but I remember tapes.
Yeah. But now we stream everything. We buy albums as downloads. Internet radio and playlists are like the new wave. We send each other links to music when we want to share. So, do you remember recording your favorite song from the radio onto a tape? I used to do that.
I'm pretty sure I can still find one of those tapes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my mom still has my old boombox. I used to try to record Pink all the time from the radio. Yes, Black Pink.
Yes.
Stop it.
So with like the streaming, like first, how do we think that it's affected the quality of music? The fact that we basically do all music over the internet. Because there's people like Chance the Rapper, right? So now it's the floodgate is kind of open for how many more people can hear your music, because the internet allows you to just kind of put it out there and anyone can hear it at any point. Mm-hmm. Chance the Rapper has no record label.
Yep.
He makes all his music is always free. Mm-hmm. And he's somehow making money from music. Like, he has these dope-ass distribution deals where, you know, like, Apple Music gets it exclusively or whatever that is. But it still all ends up being free. So we have that. And without the internet, like, things like that wouldn't be possible. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate Chance because he is kind of taking that dollar out of art. The way that he gives his music away for free. I always say I never want to get paid for doing music. Like, I never want to have to rely on music to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. Like, getting paid is cool, but I don't want it to, like, feed me literally, because it'll just, like, ruin it. And it seems like Chance kind of has that situation going on, but he's somehow still getting paid. Unlike me. How do we think that the internet has affected the quality of music, the accessibility? Well, obviously, it's more accessible. I guess we don't need to, like, and then the impact of, like, music fame in the age of Lil Yachty, Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Pump. I just found out that person's name recently. How does that, like, how has the internet impacted, like, who is a famous musician?
On the one hand, it's a good thing because the good musicians can get recognized like that. You can go viral for having a good song or a good video of a song or a good cover, because everybody will see it immediately and keep retweeting, keep posting it, you know. On the flip side, I think that artists or entertainers have become lazy. Because I don't know if you guys remember this. I'm pretty sure you do. We're all students of music. You remember when you grinded off of your album for about a year? You were grinding. You were out there. You were promo. You were singing everywhere. We heard your songs for a year. That album wasn't going anywhere.
At least for one full year.
Right. At least.
Yeah.
And now you have people dropping albums 3 months after the other one. You have people not even dropping albums. They're just like, oh, I'm going to just drop a single just as I feel like it. And I know people will listen to it. Why? Because I have Instagram. If you have your 100 plus, 100 million plus followers, you don't got to do no promo. Post that song on your page and there it goes. They're going to listen to it. Yeah. You also, the exclusivity of having an album and you having, like, that experience of, she didn't release it as a single, it's not on the radio, but I know this song.
Ugh, I used to love, like,
and
that.
The only way that you're gonna be able to hear this song is if I let you listen to it on my CD player, or if you go and get your own, if you get your own album. Now, like you said, I just send a song over and just like, hey, listen to this. You don't even, if you have
I
the
just
streaming,
click on that shit and put it on right away.
And if you have the streaming source, you don't have to buy the album, you don't have to buy the CD. And you can also choose to not even listen to the songs you don't like. Like, you can only listen to that one album. It's just, or that one song. So, like, it's, that change to me is, it's interesting. But I do believe that it has made artists a little more lazier. Like, because they can just make something today and in a week be like, ugh, it's not going to be on the album. Just drop it just because I have it.
Wow. That's so interesting. I like that. I like that perspective.
The machine has even changed.
Because I feel like I work in two camps of people where that's true. Like, some people are more, like, become more lazy, or they'll just put out stuff when they feel like it or something like that. And they don't have to rely on how that goes exactly. They know it'll hit some people, it'll gain some traction, and that's fine. And then I'm in this other camp of people, like, because things have changed in this way, it's, like, made them work even harder. But it's taken some of their time away. Like, they're working harder on the logistics, and they have to be so calculated about when to drop each single, yeah, and how to, which person to contact to make, right, sure that it gets on the right curated playlist, mm-hmm, so that it'll get bumped up, so that it can get more listens. And like, that's real, because they're working artists, like, yeah, they don't, that's their job, mm-hmm, you know. And so it's really interesting to see both camps of people where it is just like, okay, we have to release everything one single at a time. It's, even though the whole album, we already recorded it, mm-hmm, that shit was mad expensive to do.
Right.
That hasn't changed.
Right. It's still expensive to do that.
To record an album in the studio. So like, we have to drop these things so that like publicity works in this way, because even publicity's,
it's different.
Attention span has gotten shorter.
You'll be gone after 7 days if ain't nothing.
It's like, possible. Let's catch them on this. They don't have room to think about our whole album. They have room to think about this single.
This 30 seconds.
This for a while, then they'll go away. When we'll hit another one, they'll come back to us. So the strategies have like actually changed, mm-hmm, because of the way that this is like being done. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's real interesting. Like, you can literally be sitting down. I can be sitting down right now and scroll through my phone and be like, ugh, I'm just going to put it on Apple Music. Like,
right,
yeah. I can just put, you literally don't have to get out of your chair to promo.
Wow.
You're sitting there in your living room. Amazing. Okay, this is how my title account looks. Mm-hmm. This is how Apple Music. This is Spotify. And we're done. Share, retweet, like other fans. Like, that line has legitimately kind of been blurred because of social media. And I also think that artists, I think, cause a little more anxiety to artists too.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because before, they couldn't really see what people were thinking about their music. They kind of had the critics and the like, TV shows or the radio stations. Now, people be under people's comments like, girl, this is trash. you're trash. Everything you stand about is trash.
I didn't quite think
that artists or entertainers and stuff like paid attention to that stuff until you start hearing about Nicki Minaj blowing up, Chris Brown blowing up, Azealia Banks. Oh, but just like people blowing up because they're actually reading these tweets and stuff like that. I'm like, it's, that has changed. And I mean, I think it even causes artists to be like, well, okay, that was bad. I got to try to do something else. I got to do this now. And like, that to me also has, I think, is what the internet has done. So for
that was like the downfall of Lost. Like, they let too many cooks in the kitchen, and then it just turned out to be trash. That's Nicki Minaj now.
Poor baby.
So who are your pre-internet musical heroes / inspirations? Mine is Donny Hathaway. So hard, but Stevie Wonder, actually. Stevie Wonder is like my pre-internet, like, wow, like, phenomenal, plays every instrument, phenomenal songwriter. I mean, wrote all the hits, too.
All of them. Exactly.
And they're crazy. They're not just like regular pop songs, but somehow they are regular pop songs. They're like very pop, but like, wow, next level. Aviva.
Yeah. Stevie Wonder's way up there for me because I grew up on those records. Nina Simone's up there for me.
Nina.
Even like more recent, like even moving like into the 90s, just like pre-Chris is like, I mean, even like, you know, Bjork was up there for me.
She
did not ever care what people were going
she
to
just makes
about
all
her
yeah
process.
She's so dope.
Like, yes, this is how I'm doing it. So yeah, she was a real inspiration for me. And like, I mean, both Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson.
Definitely.
Yes, Whisper Janet.
But I was just Whisper. Like, I want to do that.
Yes.
I want to sing and I want to dance my whole life. That's what I want to do. And if I hadn't been like listening to them, I probably wouldn't have been like so hype about it.
My number one is always going to be Music Soul Child.
That bamboozler.
I knew that she was going to like that, but like,
he bamboozled us, y'all. Go back and listen to the albums. He can't sing.
All right.
Oh my God. It was the thing was, I think even though that whole controversy happened with him, like it did. However, I remember constantly playing out his albums when they came out. Yeah. Like it was definitely one of those moments for me where I was like, I know that this is what I want to be, that guy that sings about love and the relationships and the heartbreak and all. Like I knew from music that was what it was going to be. My
the
other
was fresh. It's still fresh for me, obviously. I just recently found out he couldn't sing.
It was,
but I loved his.
I still loved his music.
All his albums. I went up to like 7 albums. Like Music and the Magic was the last one I listened to, and I mean, he is a great songwriter.
He is still a great songwriter.
It's true.
Yeah.
Also, we've brought her up so many times, but Miss Mariah is
an icon.
I'm just like never going to stop talking about
it.
Like,
a legend. Whitney Houston. Clearly.
Like, I mean, the legends are the legends. And I'm going to always give it to them. And it's funny, my best friend, he says it like when he listens to the music that I write and stuff, he's just like, you just freaking stalked Mariah Carey. Like, that's all you did was you just stalked her and her formula and everything. And I didn't realize up until recently, like we said, like, I didn't realize that I was that into her. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I was just, like, enthralled with, like, everything she was doing until, you know, I noticed even things that I sing. It's just like, oh, wow, that's kind of Mariah Carey. Like,
yeah.
And my last one is gonna be, you know, still a church boy, so Clark sisters, definitely.
Ugh, Karen all day. I was gonna say the same. Gospel is my heart. I've been doing gospel stuff at every single one of my sets. I don't know what happened, but I just like, oh, actually, I started going to church with Sean, and we went to Abyssinia in Harlem. Mm-hmm. Very black. Cicely Tyson is my church member. Mm-hmm. she's fabulous.
I can't say.
But I was back in black church, which I obviously avoid like the plague. Yeah. Like, but we went, and I just remembered how much I used to love. Like, that was my first music memories. Mm-hmm. Is like my mom played in like 4 churches, so like every Sunday we were like at a different church,
right?
And it was like when contemporary gospel was blowing up, so like Hezekiah Walker, Hezekiah. 99 and a half, like
baby, I've done all the dances to 99
yeah, like Kurt Franklin is busting on the scene, like Kim Burrell is coming out. The Clark sisters are kind of like just doing their solo thing. Mm-hmm. Like Claren Clark Shear was just doing her solo thing. Finally, Balm and Gilead. Oh, honey. That's my jam.
I can't even.
Yeah, like, I'm like telling, but Richard let me tell you Smallwood, something. But I opened with Richard Smallwood Angels at my last show. I just did the first 2 verses. And so, like, that is like, that's my. Like, of all everything. Of like, everything, getting back to like who I am is like gospel.
Yeah, I mean, it always is just, it's there for me. Like, honestly, the church will teach you how to be a artist. Ooh, like, God. They will teach
you. Can't
you.
Fake it. I be it's, going in. I have a little worship
and I keep
moment.
Telling, I tell people this all the time. I'm like, baby, the toughest critics in this world are the church.
Yes,
baby, because they will look at you like, that was flat, but it's
okay. I wish somebody would. My mama would have absolutely not. My mama would have snatched somebody up.
I used
to sing in adult choirs when I was younger, so
I was at
an adult, like I was getting flown places to sing with the adults.
Let me tell you something. I will sing in front of thousands of people. You put me in front of that church and I am nervous. Mm-hmm. Like, oh God, please just don't let me crack. Don't let me hit no wrong notes. Ooh. Cause baby, they will look.
Nah, listen, I be trying to just act like I'm deep in worship. So from white girls wearing braids to calling the cops on black folks breathing. What white wine did you bring to the table today? This is my favorite part of the show. It's a white she mad moment. And anytime. I mean, anytime is fine.
Mm-hmm.
From Permit Patty.
Oh, God.
To people getting slapped for saying the N-word. You know, it's all, you know, runs the gamut. What did y'all bring this week?
Well, I'm bringing something personal that actually just happened a few days ago. And I was like, you know what? I was going to rant about it. And I saved it for the show.
Thank you.
So me and my sister and little brother went ice skating for my birthday on Friday. No, we went to Bryant Park. And it was a couple of black boys that was standing over by the bag check.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my sister was standing over there by the bag check with my brother in our skates. And everyone is walking in the little area with their skates on because they're either trying to move out or they're trying to get to the bag check and stuff. Right. So this lady, I don't know what she thought she was about to do, but she was a tiny lady. First of all, I'm like, oh, you bold. This little white lady is walking through. Excuse me. Can you? And so people are like trying to move out the way and she starts just like pushing, literally pushing people. Like, no, you need to move. And so she pushed this one little girl who was from New York and it was
the wrong pandemonium.
And I'm sitting here looking like, and so she's just like, no, you. And literally she looked like she was about to like cock back and hit her. Literally fell flat on her back. She was like, you. And everyone turned around and was like, it was a white lady. Everyone turned around like, And I was like, And her mom, I guess it was her mom because it was an older lady. Oh my God, you pushed her. And I was like, girl, nobody pushed anybody. Nobody touched her. She actually, like, she was about to touch the other girl. Don't lie. And the other, you know how we are. So the other girl, I got it on tape. It was a whole scene. And she just walked away and she was crying. And I was like, white tears. I love them. So I waited to rant about that one.
That's great.
I could not even, but she's so tiny and was still like pushing through. And I was like, the thing is, all of us are trying to get to the same place as you. Right, what makes you think that you're about to get to the front of this pack just because you ready to go? We ready to go too, girl. Like, and ain't nobody help. No, everyone looked down like, girl, ain't nobody about to help you. Like, she just looked so mortified. And I was like, girl.
Bye. Yes. Oh, I would have paid money to see that.
When I tell you I was lit, I was at the counter. The thing is, the people, because everybody behind the counter was black too. The people who were taking the bags, they stopped and was looking too, because everybody is literally looking at this lady fussing, and we're just like, girl.
I love us, honey. We always find our community. We always know how to be by each other when something like this transpires.
Everyone stopped and was just looking at her. One of the smallest ladies in there. I'm like, girl. I'm like,
you got that. I had to settle for running white ladies off the sidewalk this week. What you got, Viva?
It's not personal. I'm just... And this shit is petty to begin with.
Of course it is.
These girls on IG or wherever literally... giving makeup tutorials.
Oh, the nigger fishing.
I'm just like, first of all, it takes forever. I don't care if this shit takes forever. Then you're gonna be like, I'm just really tan.
This was taken in summer. Where I tan very easily in the summer.
Feelings of like them being found out to be white and like the horror. Like, because it's, I just love the public. Like, how many times a day, a week, a year do we get to see people collectively be like, they're white. Fuck. You know what I mean? Like,
Dolezal syndrome spreads. It's global now.
To see people so disappointed in their whiteness when they find out. Like, I'm like, yes, be disappointed.
Or the ones who be like, I don't think I'm trying to look black. I just get lip fillers and I get my ass done and like I get my boobs done.
Like, that's
and
that
I wear braids.
Yeah,
I don't know why anyone would think that I was trying to be black, especially when I'm so dark because I just tan in the summer naturally.
Yeah.
I become brown.
Well, girl, what are you trying to be? Answer that.
Right. Because
give me an answer. I'll wait.
Exactly. Like, you just can't admit that we're your standard for beauty. Just say it.
Just say it.
We are.
Yeah, they because could what never standard have an unreachable do you standard for
have?
You.
Keep trying.
I mean, I where are you pulling your inspiration or your culture from? So, like, I would love to sit down and just listen to you try to convince me.
White people have no culture.
Exactly.
And that's going to be all, folks. I want to thank my friends, Miles and Miss Aviva J, for joining me this week. Thanks for coming. It was a pleasure.
I know.
And we'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Black Friends Dinner is produced by myself, Nandi K, and Sean Dawson. Audio by Sean Dawson. Opening music by Leonidas.